of Rome's pivotal role in forming the Femic organizations of the Black Reichswehr and the Freikorps, Conrad Haydn writes as follows in Der Führer. This Rome, more than any other in his circle, is the key figure we were seeking when we asked, who sent out the murderers? Who gave the judges their orders? A young officer in his mid-30s, a captain like a thousand others, the kind who might gladly and easily disappear in the mass, he stood modestly aside in the dazzling parades where generals and marshals, personally responsible, perhaps, for the loss of the war, were applauded by a misguided patriotic youth. Rome was only an adjutant to the chief of the infantry troops stationed in Bavaria, a certain Colonel von Epp. But from this modest post, he established, in defiance of the law and against the will of every minister in Berlin and Munich, a volunteer army of 100,000 men, calling themselves modestly the Arnewohnerwehr, the citizens' defense. When this armed mass was finally disbanded by orders from above, he formed a new nuclei. New organizations kept springing up with all sorts of names under constantly changing official leaders, all having ostensibly nothing to do with the Reichswehr. Actually, all were an extension of the Reichswehr under the command of Rome. Very important to remember, as we saw last time, that the Freikorps, the Black Reichswehr, the FEMA were extensions of the German army operating in defiance of the civilian authority in Weimar Germany. The next point that Conrad Haydn goes on to make here that we're going to cover concerns the cooperation of certain elements of the Allied occupation force in Germany. Many of these so-called control commissions were sympathetic to the positions of the Freikorps and Black Reichswehr because they feared the possibility of revolution in Germany, and so they actively took part in seeing to it that these underground German army organizations got the armaments that were left over from World War I. Haydn describes this as follows. A gigantic arsenal had been left behind by the fallen German army. In the peace treaty, Germany had promised to destroy it. The Allies supervised the process by control commissions, sitting in the large cities of Germany and traveling throughout the country. These arms had to be saved. In Bavaria, Rome undertook this task. He was able to persuade a few of the Allied officers that these old armored cars and rusty machine guns could be of no use in serious warfare, but would come in handy for combating the world revolution which was moving through Germany toward the Rhine. This strange collaboration with the Allied organs must have been very close. In his memoirs, Rome indicates as much in passing, praising certain British officers and mentioning an Italian, Major Gramaccini, last name G-R-A-M-M-A-C-I-N-I. Now, the next thing that Haydn goes on to describe here is the fact that Ernst Röhm basically was the key man who formed the German Nazi Party. Now, this was the German Nazi Party, that is, the German National Socialist Workers' Party, basically grew out of a defunct political party. Now, the key figure, again, with the formation of the German Nazi Party was Ernst Röhm. And it's important to note a couple of things here. First of all, that in its inception, the German Nazi Party was nothing more than a front for German military intelligence. The German Nazi Party was basically a vehicle for introducing the German army into civilian life for the purposes of fomenting political reaction and eventually promoting a political situation in Germany favorable to the realization of the long-standing dream of German generals and industrialists of world conquest, okay? But remember, in its inception, the German Nazi Party was nothing more than a front for German military intelligence. And it's worth noting that the same person who, according to Haydn, was the key figure with regard to the formation of the Freikorps and the Black Reichswehr, and to all appearances the liaison officer between the regular German general staff and these so-called Freikorps, these so-called underground organizations, again, actually an extension of the German army, was Ernst Röhm. He then becomes the founder of the German Nazi Party, and after the Nazi Party was founded, Ernst Röhm became the head of the SA, the Sturmabteilung, who were the brown shirts. These were the fellows who actually went out into the streets of Weimar Germany and, through force of arms, basically conquered all of their opponents by either driving them underground or killing them outright, okay? And as Haydn points out in the passage I'm about to read, entire companies of the supposedly demobilized German army were turned out in the ranks of the Sturmabteilung, the brown shirts, up to company strength, okay? Haydn writes as follows, in der Führer of the founding of the Nazi Party. Rome founded the National Socialist German Workers' Party. It might be said to have existed before him under the simpler name of the German Workers' Party. But that was a club, sitting in the back rooms of little restaurants, talking. At all events, a mere idea. And an idea it remained until the club, seeking to win over the German workers, became the party of soldiers. This was Rome's work. He discovered the club, joined it, an officer among workers, and not he alone. With commands, he forced his soldiers. With pleas, he drove his comrades into it. Thus, the party became a political troop. Whole Reichswehr companies marched through the streets in civilian clothes as National Socialists. Thus arose the formation which later, as the SA, became the basic party formation. So again, not to belabor the point, the German Nazi Party in its inception, a front for German military intelligence, the supposedly demobilized German army simply being turned out in the ranks of the stormtroopers, the brown shirts. Now, where does Adolf Hitler fit into this whole business? Basically, Adolf Hitler, just like Ernst Röhm, was an underground, intelligence agent for the German army during this revolutionary period. Now, jumping back in time just a little bit, Hitler's first assignment as an undercover German army intelligence agent was to infiltrate the unsuccessful German revolution in the Munich area and betray it. And this he did quite effectively. Basically, he was a stool pigeon. Haydn writes about this in Der Führer as follows. When the white troops, that's the reactionary troops, when the white troops entered Munich, they went to the 19th Infantry Barracks and found a body of soldiers which an eyewitness later called a wild red rabble, unquote. Every 10th man chosen at random was stood up against the wall and shot. Only one was set aside from the very first to be spared. His position was only too clear. When the high officers of the Munich Reichswehr fled before the radical uprising, they had left this man behind to observe and report. A dangerous commission requiring courage, but ugly. A few months previous, this man had attracted the attention of his officers in a strange way. They all noticed him, one of them later recollected, because his salutes were so punctilious as to be provocative in those revolutionary months when most of the soldiers defiantly refrained from saluting at all. When the government troops stormed Munich, his comrades wanted to help defend the city. He made a speech dissuading them. His comrades had suspected him of being a spy, and during the Soviet regime, he barely escaped arrest. Now he became the executioner. After May 2nd, an examining commission sent hundreds of men to the slaughterhouse wall. This man soon came to the attention of the commission, which used him as an informer. He delivered his reports in writing and later boasted of them. When he was ordered before the examining commission, wrote one of his friends, his indictments cast a merciless clarity upon the unspeakable disgrace of the military treason practiced by the Jewish dictatorship of Munich's Soviet period, unquote. By rank, this stool pigeon was a corporal. By nationality, strange to say, an Austrian. His stated profession was painter and architect. His name was Adolf Hitler. Well, that passage is essentially accurate in all but one small respect. His real name, that is to say, Hitler's real name, was not Adolf Hitler at all. That was an intelligence alias. His real name was Adolf Schickelgruber. Now, following his role infiltrating the German Revolution in the Munich area, his next assignment, basically Hitler's next assignment, was to join the fledgling Nazi party. Remember, this was essentially at this stage an intelligence front under the direction of Ernst Röhm. A good account of this is provided in a book we've covered before. The book is called The Plot Against the Peace, authored by Michael Sayers and Albert E. Kahn, published in March of 1945 by the Dial Press, hardcover edition. This, of course, was the book that we used in the last broadcast for our description of the FEMA. And of Adolf Hitler's infiltration, or of Adolf Hitler's next assignment following the infiltration of the German Revolution, Sayers and Kahn write as follows. In the spring of 1919, a so-called Reichswehr instructor, unquote, or a spy, stationed as a corporal at the depot of the 16th Regiment in Munich, received orders from his superiors to go into an organization called the German Workers' Party and to help other Reichswehr agents reorganize it as an instrument of general staff propaganda for the post-war period. The officer who gave these orders was Captain Ernst Röhm, founder of the Freikorps Reichsflagge, and in charge of Reichswehr political intrigue in the Munich area. The name of the spy who received these orders was Adolf Schickelgruber, a former pan-German propagandist from Vienna, who had adopted the alias of Adolf Hitler and was currently being trained as a mass agitator by the political department of the District Army Command under General von Lossow, L-O-S-S-O-W. The German Workers' Party had originally been set up by the Pan-German League in collaboration with the Kaiser's Socialists, unquote, the social democratic ministers in the German cabinet, to win popular support for the Kaiser's war aims. After the armistice, the organization had collapsed. On instructions from the Reichswehr political department, the Pan-German agent Gottfried Feder was trying to revive the German Workers' Party as an anti-Semitic and anti-communist mass propaganda organization. Hitler was one of several Pan-German propagandists, spies, and agents sent by the Reichswehr political department to assist Feder in this work. In the first pages of Mein Kampf, Hitler writes, "I joined a regiment then in garrison at Munich as instructing officer. One day I was ordered by my superiors to look into an apparently political organization that, under the name of the German Workers' Party, was soon to hold a meeting at which Gottfried Feder was to speak. Hitler joined the German Workers' Party as member number 7. Other members included Captain Ernst Röhm, the Reichswehr agents and pan-German propagandists Gottfried Feder, Anton Drexler, and Dietrich Eckert, and the Freikorps leader General von Epp. These men reorganized the party and renamed it the German Workers' National Socialist Party. Among the first recruits were the Egyptian-born international adventurer and ex-officer Rudolf Hess, and the Baltic White Guard and anti-Semitic propagandist from Tsarist Russia, Alfred Rosenberg. Out of this underworld political alliance of pan-German propagandists, Reichswehr spies, Freikorps leaders, and international adventurers, the Nazi Party was born." A couple of points to make there. First of all, recall that General von Epp was Rome's superior. Rome was his adjutant in the Munich area. And we're going to talk about General von Epp here again in a second. Note also that these people, Dietrich Eckert, Rudolf Hess, and Alfred Rosenberg, went on to become key members of the German Nazi Party, and that they were all there at the inception of this organization, acting in the capacity of German army intelligence agents. Okay, again, the Nazi Party in its inception was nothing more than an intelligence front for German military intelligence. Okay, now keep that in mind, and we're going to go back to Der Führer by Konrad Haydn and take a look at a couple of other interesting chapters, I guess you could say, in the formation of this intelligence front. Now, keep in mind, as you listen to all of this, the information that we covered concerning the Ku Klux Klan, where agents like people like Roy Frankhauser, David Duke, Bill Wilkinson, and others, although Klan leaders, turned out to be government agents and informers. We can't draw any definite conclusions from this, but the unnerving similarity between the contemporary Ku Klux Klan and the initial stages of the German Nazi Party, where an ostensibly political organization was really just an intelligence front, and where all of its key leaders were actually informers or agents of the German army, is unnerving. Keep in mind also that in its initial stages, the Nazi Party was denigrated by much the same kind of talk that one hears about the Klan. Basically, it was just a bunch of street rabble, didn't represent any kind of serious threat. And while I'm not implying that the Klan in and of itself could become a serious political force in American society, organizations like this, particularly if the economy should collapse, as some are saying it might, could become a very, very, very strong force in American society in light of the social dislocation that a serious depression could cause. The depression and the desperation it engendered, the Great Depression, that is, and the desperation it engendered, was one of the major forces in bringing the Nazis to power. And keep in mind, the role of these undercover agents and the unnerving similarity with certain with large elements of Klan leadership today. Again, discussing Adolf Hitler and the inception of the Nazi Party here. Going back to Der Führer by Konrad Haydn. The party did not yet bear the name National Socialist. The term was still unknown. But the most revealing item in Hitler's report about the first meeting of this party is that he was surrounded by a body of personal supporters, that these supporters intervened, unquote, against interrupters, and that they had sidearms. In other words, a troop of armed soldiers founded the National Socialist Party. The employee of the Political Bureau of the Munich District Army Command had come with a squad of Reichswehr soldiers. According to reports from a hostile source, they belonged to a company of mine throwers. First, he had his political opponents driven out with cold steel. This is the meaning of intervention, unquote, as everyone knows who ever attended a National Socialist meeting in those years. Then he shouted at the terrorized crowd, "If anyone else dares, let him speak up against the program." Before the meeting, he was not sure whether he was an orator or not, but he did feel sure of his sidearms. So, in its inception, the German army was the main force with the Nazi party, and anybody who would disagree with the position of that party found themselves confronted by armed force in the form of the brown shirts, again, the supposedly demobilized German army. The last aspect in the infancy of the German Nazi party we're going to look at concerns the acquisition of a newspaper called the Munich Observer, which was then it had its name changed to the Racial Observer, of Völkischer Beobachter, as it would be in German. The acquisition of this paper by the fellow named von Epp, and initially a colonel when we first looked at him as Ernst Röhm's superior in the Munich area. He, by the time of the purchase of the Munich Observer, was a major general. And recall that Mr. von Epp, or Herr von Epp, was one of the charter members of the Nazi party. And keep in mind, when Röhm was running the underground murder organizations of the German army, his contact with the general staff was General von Epp. And General von Epp purchased the newspaper Munich Observer for the Nazi party, which then became its official newspaper after a change of name. General von Epp's role in the purchase of the Nazi party paper was described by Conrad Haydn as follows. The Reichswehr went on supporting its child and, if possible, guiding its steps. There was a little weekly in Munich, originally nothing but a rather suspect, scandal-mongering enterprise called the Munich Observer, a gossip sheet, not more. After the war, it slowly turned anti-Semitic, changed its name into Racial Observer, Völkischer Beobachter, on account of internal and personal quarrels. The paper was rather cool toward Hitler and his friends. Now, Major General Franz von Epp, commander of the Bavarian infantry troops and the body to which Röhm was the right hand, bought the Völkischer Beobachter for the National Socialists. Rather, he raised a fund among wealthy persons and gave it to Dietrich Eckert to buy a paper. To be sure, the rich men were little inclined to support a party calling itself socialist, but Hitler publicly set them straight. For National Socialists, it goes without saying that industrial capital, since it creates values, will remain untouched. We combat only Jewish international loan capital, unquote. So again, General von Epp, Röhm's superior, Röhm being commander of the Freikorps and Black Reichswehr, founder of the Nazi party and head of the Sturmabteilung, the SA, his superior officer buys the Munich Observer to become the Nazi party paper. That pretty much winds things up for the broadcast. Summing up, we began by taking a look at the pivotal role that Ernst Röhm played in the Reichswehr, the Black Reichswehr, the Freikorps, the FEMA, the underground murder organizations of the German army. Following that, we took a look at the collaboration of certain elements of the Allied occupation force in Germany with the underground murder organizations of the German army. They basically, that is to say, the Allied control commissions, feared the possibility of revolution in Germany and saw to it that the Black Reichswehr was well armed. Following that, we took a look at Ernst Röhm's pivotal role in founding the Nazi Party, initially a front for German military intelligence, and we took a look at Röhm's role with the stormtroopers as well. Again, the Nazi Party is simply a vehicle for introducing the German army into civilian society. Following that, we took a look at Adolf Hitler's role in infiltrating the German Revolution in the Munich area and his betrayal of that revolution. And we also took a look at his assignment by Ernst Röhm to infiltrate the fledgling German National Socialist Workers' Party, the Nazi party that Röhm had founded. And we took a look also at the role of the stormtroopers, the supposedly demobilized German army, in quelling opposition to this fledgling German party. And last but not least, we took a look at the role of General von Epp, Rome's commanding officer, in purchasing the newspaper which was to become the Völkischer Beobachter, the official Nazi party paper. Keep in mind, again, the comparison between the contemporary Ku Klux Klan with the leaders of the Ku Klux Klan today, most of them appearing to be government agents, and the leaders of the fledgling German Nazi Party, agents of German military intelligence. That concludes this broadcast. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.